Sometimes I lay under the moon. I thank God I'm breathing. And I pray, don't take me soon, cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes
in my... You are tuned into Healing for the Nations with your host, modern-day Samaritan woman, Laura Lee. Laura Lee is a no-nonsense warrior who is a credentialed substance abuse counselor with a degree in counseling. Understanding the heart issues in our lives, she herself is a trauma survivor and former addict, recovering in the image of our Messiah. It's time to apply the soothing balm of the Word to our hearts as Laura Lee brings us Healing for the Nations.
I am the woman at the well. I come to the well in the heat of the day alone, to avoid the sneers and the gossiping, wagging tongues that cut into my already broken heart. I avoid the painful ignorance and the lack of loving care. Shame, it is my only covering. My men, they have all thrown me away for those that are younger and prettier than I. The shattered pieces of my life lay scattered all around me, leaving a trail of tears, desperate to be loved. Shattered and scattered is my soul. And then he, the King, the Messiah, he came to meet me at the well. He told me all about myself. He didn't shame me. He didn't blame me. He didn't chastise me. He didn't re-victimize me. He offered me forgiveness, acceptance, and he delivered me from all the demons. He fulfills all my hopes of an abiding, undying love that will never end.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Healing for the Nations. I am a modern-day Samaritan woman. Here on Healing for the Nations, we are on a journey to the Father's heart together. We together are preparing for the soon return of our bridegroom. Our wedding attire must be without spot or wrinkles. I have spots and wrinkles on my wedding attire, and I'm sure that perhaps maybe you have spots and wrinkles on your wedding attire. Maybe I can help you with your spots and wrinkles, and I'm sure that you could help me with the spots and wrinkles on my wedding attire. You see, we all need safe people in our lives to speak truth, to point those spots and wrinkles out. I've mentioned to you before my mentor, Jen, who is no longer with us. She sowed time and energy into building a relationship with me. I trusted her. She told me the truth about myself, and frequently, I wasn't too happy about what she had to say about my spots and wrinkles. But you know, I trusted her because I knew she loved me, and I knew that she spoke the truth in love. And I knew that she knew my Creator. She knew the scriptures. She walked with the lover of her soul and the lover of my soul, so I could receive her words of chastisement. And I miss her. She was my sponsor, my mentor, my confidant, and she was used by the King to help me on my journey to becoming more like the Messiah. And this, my brothers and sisters, is what we need in our lives. We've been discussing step 4 of the 12 steps of recovery, which is taking a fearless and moral inventory of ourselves. So I've been discussing step 4, focusing in on how we are doing as the body of the Messiah in providing care for the spiritual widows and orphans. And I would also like to invite the listener to read the first 8 chapters of the book of Nehemiah, because along with the 12 steps of recovery, which is our pathway on this journey, the book of Nehemiah, the first 8 chapters, is our template and the journey of recovery, recovering the broken down places in our lives. So last week, as I stated, we did discuss spiritual widows and orphans. So I want to do a little recap on that before we move into our topic of discussion today, which is flying monkeys and Job's friend. So recapping last week, like I said, we spoke on widows and orphans, spiritual widows and spiritual orphans. We looked at many scriptures that clearly show us the mandate to provide care for them. Unfortunately, today the government here in the U.S. is overburdened by the needs of widows and orphans and foreigners. The body, as I stated, the body of Messiah is commanded to provide care for our own. And are we as a body fulfilling that commandment from our King? So the Encyclopedia Britannica states, care for widows and orphans. The Christian congregation has traditionally cared for the poor, the sick, widows, and orphans. The letter of James says, religion that is pure and undefiled before God is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction. Widows formed a special group in the congregations and were asked to help with nursing care and other service obligations as long as they did not need help and care themselves. End of quote. So I invite the listener to go to Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman Facebook page to listen to the last program, or you can find the last program by going to Hebrew Nations Radio Online to tune in. There you will also find past programs. We are almost at the 2-year mark for the anniversary of the beginning of this radio program. So I want to share with you an article I found by Jim Morgan. And the article is on Jesus cares more about widows and single moms than your church does. This is written on August the 2nd, 2017. And the article states, no founder, leader, or prophet of any other major world religion loves or values women as much as Jesus does. Throughout his ministry, he demonstrated his heart for widows and mothers. He defended them. They, the religious leaders, devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. These men will be punished most severely. Mark 12:40. He praised them. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, truly, I tell you, this widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. Mark 12:43. He healed them. Jesus left the synagogue and went to the home of Simon. Now Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. Luke 4:38. He honored their requests. People, mothers, were bringing little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them. But the disciples rebuked them. And he, Yeshua, Jesus, took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. Mark 10:13-16. He performed miracles for them. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, don't cry. Luke 7:12-13. He listened to their prayers, and there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, grant me justice against my adversary. Luke 18:3. He elevated their needs above the churches. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God. Matthew 15:5. He warned them how dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. There will be great distress in the land and wrath against this people. Luke 21:23. He kept them from becoming single moms. Twice in the book of Matthew, Yeshua said, I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Matthew 5:32, Matthew 19:9. He loved and cared for his own mother. And to the disciple, here is your mother. From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. John 19:27. The apostles understood that Yeshua held widows and mothers in high regard, continuing to emphasize to church leaders how important they should be to the church. James emphasized to call to serve them. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress. James 1:27. Peter emphasized their role in evangelism. He, Peter, took her by the hand and helped her to her feet. Then he called for the believers, especially the widows. Acts 9:41. Paul emphasized our need to respect them. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. 1 Timothy 5 1 and 2. The message from Jesus and his disciples is clear. Each of us is to treat all women, old and young, inside or outside our churches, as we would treat our own mothers or sisters. When Christians who are the living, breathing personification of church encounter a widow or single mom, Jesus' words should ring in our ears. Here is your mother, or here is your sister. What should your church be doing? 1 Timothy 5 elaborates on the church's responsibilities. The church should take loving care of women whose husbands have died if they don't have anyone else to help them. But if they have children or grandchildren, these are the ones who should take the responsibility. The church should care for widows who are poor and alone in the world if they are looking to God for his help and spending much time in prayer, but not if they are spending their time running around gossiping and seeking only pleasure and thus ruining their souls. This should be your church rule so that the Christians will know and do what is right. Let me remind you again that a widow's relatives must take care of her and not leave this to the church to do. Then the church can spend its money for the care of widows who are all alone and have no one else to turn to. 1 Timothy 5, 3 through 7, 16, and that's taken from the Living Bible. As with children in need, which we discussed last week, widows and single moms who attend church should be in less distress than their unchurched counterparts if churches are fulfilling the biblical mandate to care for their brothers and sisters. Women in distress, poor and alone in the world outside the church body are included in James's and Paul's writings and are urging churches to care for them as their own mothers and sisters. Otherwise, the church is failing to practice religion that our God and our Father accepts as pure and faultless. Jesus expects his church to look out not only for widows, but also for single mothers, and for good reason. Then as now, they have always had it rough, grieving a lost husband or marriage. And I want to add that a woman can be grieving inside of a marriage if it is an abusive one and she's feeling stuck, but no way out. For lonely, those that are lonely for companionship, but often find it hard to have new relationships when they're older or when they have children, financially strapped with the loss of a husband's income, and often a deadbeat dad, delinquent on child support, sometimes working more than one job, not being able to spend much quality time with the children, sole responsibility for chores around the house, and solo parenting, which can be exhausting. Given their plight, Jesus' example and biblical imperatives, what should your church be doing to reach out to and serve widows and single moms inside and outside your church? Note, don't forget that the word church means not only the collective body, but you as an individual, as a called out one belonging to the Lord. And this does include spiritual widows also. First of all, ensure that there aren't any struggling mothers or lonely widows within your church. Acts 2:44-46. Form outreach teams or launch ministries specifically designed to identify and support single moms and widows in the community by providing free childcare, meals, financial aid, legal services, etc. Added note, find the area resources and have them available for all to see. There may be some women that will not disclose what she's dealing with, but they can glean from the resources that are provided in a community posting. Mentor and tutor children suffering from the loss of a father or victimized by broken relationships, knowing how little attention those children will receive unless someone else steps into their lives, and the high likelihood that they will run off course without a Christian role model. 85% of all youths in prison come from fatherless homes, and young men who grow up in homes without fathers are twice as likely to end up in jail. Note, also find area 12-step support meetings such as Alateen for them if there's alcoholism and or drug abuse going on within the home. Yet because few churches are engaged in these types of ministries, because church is now defined as a place and the lost in the community is no longer considered the church's customer, other ministries have had to bear those burdens. Moreover, each of those ministries has struggled even to engage churches as partners in their work. For example, job and career training ministries like Jobs for Life and higher living. Meal delivering compassion ministries like Meals on Wheels and Metropolitan Ministries. Church school partnership ministries providing mentoring and tutoring opportunities like Be Undivided and Church Adopt a School Initiative. It's your turn. How did churches today develop this blind spot, obstructing their view of responsibilities clearly spelled out in scriptures to help widows and single mothers inside and outside the congregation? That's a really good question. How did we end up in such a predicament? I have my own stories of struggles through the years of being a spiritual widow and my sons being spiritual orphans. I ask for prayer as I write another book about my experiences. And I implore you to go to the Father and ask the Father to show you those around you that could use your support, whether it's time and energy, whether it's childcare, whether it's paying a bill, whatever it is, people are all around us in need. I am guilty of having a blind eye, being so consumed with my own life, with my own needs, that I have not seen the needs of others. So it is a we program. We are in this together. And my prayer is that we as a body can indeed start being the hands of the Messiah to the lonely widow, to the spiritual widow that is also lonely in her marriage. I've been there. I understand. I know how hard it is to be married to someone who is not walking alongside of me and who is not being the father that my children desperately need. Brothers and sisters, we are in a world that hearts are bleeding out. There are people everywhere that are so traumatized that they need the hands of healing love to come alongside of them, to take their hand and walk with them. I am so grateful for the way that my Messiah has walked with me. And through the years of hardship, of loneliness, of need, he has provided. But I must wonder if my healing would not have come quicker if I had not encountered flying monkeys. And we're going to be talking about flying monkeys next. So I want to discuss a special focus about those that find themselves married to someone with narcissistic personality disorder or where there's domestic abuse going on. These are families that are suffering often in silence. Many know that there's something wrong, but they can't define what it is. Many carry this load alone in silence, doing the best that they can to fulfill their wedding vows. Many will be convinced that if they only do X, Y, and Z, then their spouses will love them, that their spouses will treat them better. This is a dilemma indeed. Many are reeling with trauma from all the abuse, and they feel guilty for the thoughts and the feelings that they are having, believing that they are the problem in the marriage. I want to look into how we are doing with being supportive and encouraging to those around us that may be suffering in these oppressive relationships. So I want to revisit this topic that we've discussed in the past. We've discussed narcissism, but I want to talk about not the narcissist. I want to talk about those that are in these types of relationships or have just come out of these relationships and they haven't yet healed. I want to talk about being a flying monkey. The question is this week, are you a flying monkey? Are you like Job's friends? So we're all in this together. And as I have read some of these indicators on being a flying monkey, it makes me ponder how I have been a friend to others. Have I been a safe friend? Or have I, unbeknownst to me, been a flying monkey? So I want to invite the listener to listen and ponder. Ask the Father what kind of friend you have been, what kind of friend you are, whether you're a flying monkey. Be brave, be strong, be courageous. Let's continue with our fourth step inventory, because we need to be fearless and thorough in taking an inventory in how each of us are doing individually and collectively as the body of the Messiah, as caregivers, to spiritual widows and orphans, those that are going through very hard times. So I'm going to share some information about flying monkeys so that we can all understand what flying monkeys are, that it's not some psychobabble, but that we have a clear definition of what it is. And I'm going to be drawing out of the scriptures what this may be. So because of time, I'm going to be brief. And then when we come back from the break, we're going to continue to discuss flying monkeys. Here is a definition taken from Wikipedia. Flying monkeys is a phrase used in popular psychology, mainly in the context of narcissistic abuse. There are people who act on behalf of a narcissist to a third party, usually for an abusive purpose. The phrase has also been used to refer to people who act on behalf of a psychopath for a similar purpose. An alternative word is apaths. Abuse by proxy or proxy abuse is a closely related or synonymous concept. Flying monkeys enablers just allow or cover for the narcissist abuser's own bad behavior. The phrase originally winged monkeys is derived from L. Frank Baum's classic children's novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. The Wicked Witch sent them to carry out her attacks. Repeat, the Wicked Witch sent them to carry out her attacks. Identity. Flying monkeys can be anyone who believes the narcissist's fake persona, including the narcissist's spouse, child, friend, sibling, or cousin. According to Atkinson, flying monkeys are usually unwittingly manipulated people who believe the smears about the victim, although they may be another narcissist working in tandem. According to Vaknin, proxy abusers can be the abuser's associates, the victim's associates, manipulated to side with the abuser, authority and institutional figures manipulated to side with the abuser. Tactic. The flying monkey does the narcissist's bidding to inflict additional torment on the target. It may consist of spying, spreading gossip, threatening, painting the narcissist as the victim, victim playing, and the target as the perpetrator, victim blaming. Despite this, the narcissist does not hesitate to make flying monkeys his or her scapegoats when and if needed. The flying monkeys may make it seem like the narcissist is not really involved. They are likely to have no idea that they are being used. Multiple flying monkeys are likely to act as a mobbing force against a victim. In divorce conflicts, the children can be used by one party as a weapon against the other. Motivation. The motives behind the narcissist support group can be multiple. Service providers may be seduced by the narcissist's charm into taking a one-sided perspective. Family members may, in good faith, attempt to sort out the problematic one. The codependent may seek to participate and the narcissist's omnipotence, or use them as sanction for their own aggressive instincts. Alternatively, others may simply be swept up by force of personality to define the situation along the narcissist's own lines. Because of the time element, we're going to wrap it up there. But I can tell you, reading through this, memories of what I have gone through with my last husband and those that colluded with him go through my mind. Brothers and sisters, this is real. This happens all the time. In order to not be used as a flying monkey, we need to understand what narcissism is. Some call it the Jezebel spirit, and I believe it is demonic. We need to understand how these people operate. We need to thoroughly understand how this is operating within the body of the Messiah. When we come back, we will continue to discuss flying monkeys and Job's friends. And I also want to share with you some ministries that you may want to become aware of and support. We'll be right back. Shalom. Welcome back. This is Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman. The song that you just heard is entitled Apostasy, and that is written and sung by Amber Plaster. You can find Amber's music at amberplastermusic.com. And I wanted to share a little bit about Amber. She's a singer, a songwriter, she's a crafter, wife, mother, and a lover of all things true. She has pursued music and many other talents passionately, trying to make her way in the world. She says, even though I was always a believer in Yeshua, just a few years ago, I came to a harsh realization that I would succeed at nothing without letting him be in full control. I surrendered every single talent and dream, including marriage and children, told him I was tired of failure and vain pursuits, and that I truly only wanted what he had for me and believed that's where life would be the most fulfilling. I told him I would never even think about writing, art, or future events in which doors were not clearly opened by him. She says, I was truly at an incredible understanding of what surrender really looked like, as empty as I've ever been. A few days went by and I was still and content with my plea. A few days later, a song I wrote for a few friends to hear went viral overnight, she says, overnight. And I was blown away at how it even got around. I heard Yahweh say, I can do in a moment what would take you 30 years. Trust me. I realized in that moment that he didn't desire to take away the talents he gave me, but to show me why he gave me those talents for his glory, so that he may be made famous. I knew this, but I had to really know that and change the direction of pursuits and efforts. Everything I gave up has been restored, as well as many more blessings added to my life over the last 2 years. Praise Yah, she says. She has a ministry that is called The Local Refinery. And I encourage the listener to check it out. It's based on Psalms 66:10. So I invite the listener to look that up, Psalms 66:10. And she says, Local Refinery is a brand that seeks to bring together through sales of quality handmade items for the purposes of reaching out to people in need in many different areas of this journey. We all need a little help at times, and Local Refinery hopes to be his hands and feet by extending that helping hand to the poor, orphaned, widowed, homeless, and the just plain struggling. That's why 50% of all proceeds will be donated per event to a selected ministry, family, or individual that has shared their story with us and our Heavenly Father has impressed upon us to reach out to. So feel free to explore our store and know that every purchase you make is making a difference in the life or lives of others. We will share our donation recipient story with you in hopes that you will rejoice with us when mountains are moved. What are flying monkeys? And if we get time, I'll share a little bit of my testimony. The term flying monkeys is another way of saying abuse by proxy or having someone else do the bidding of, in this case, a narcissist. The term flying monkey was coined after the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz that were under the spell of the Wicked Witch of the East to do her bidding against Dorothy and her friends. This common narcissistic tactic uses friends and family of the victim to spy on them, spread gossip while painting the narcissist as the victim and their target as the perpetrator. Flying monkeys can be your friends, family, co-workers, or the narcissist's friends, family, or co-workers before you got there. To maintain the illusion of the power they have over you, the narcissist will employ the use of third parties through which they will attempt to continue to control and manipulate you. Narcissists begin grooming your friends and family from the moment they meet them. In the beginning, the narcissist is testing them and your relationship with them to see how strong the bond is. At first, they may tell your friends and family how much they love you and how they think you are their soulmate. This test will be to see if your friends go running back to you with this information. This is sweet and loving on the surface, but behind the scenes, the mind of the narcissist is testing your friends to see if they are controllable. Over time, the messages they are feeding your friends and family may start to contain a little nugget of truth. Only now the narcissist is poking fun at you behind your back. They may highlight something like, "Tracy's such a good storyteller. I never know when she is making something up." What this test does is plant the seed for later when you start to tell your friends stories about the narcissist's lies, cheating, and other behaviors. The seed of doubt has now been planted, and your own friends and family will not believe the things you say about the narcissist when they go from good to bad. Mission accomplished. The last stage of this flying monkey stage is after the discard. This is when you are needing your friends and family most, but because of this connection your narcissist has developed with your friends and family, the narcissist quickly runs to them, spreading lies about you. Whatever the narcissist did wrong, they will accuse you of. Next, the narcissist will spread lies and target the best things about you. This mixture of little hurtful lies wounds us most deeply because they challenge our most protected characteristics. The narcissist's mask of playing victim is going to be believed by your friends. The narcissist has hand-targeted the weakest links in your friend pool, those that are most easily controlled. The smear campaign can be also spread by these flying monkeys, which further isolates you and prevents you from getting the support you need. Let's be clear, a flying monkey can also be used to broadcast to you how much the narcissist loves you and wants to work it out. They are carrier pigeons doing the bidding of the narcissist to get to you. This tactic brings your friends into the manipulation to hoover you back, or at least display the pretense that they really wanted it to work out. Now you look like the bad guy or bad girl. Your friends and family that have been targeted and used by the narcissist are also being conned. This method a narcissist uses to hook you in the beginning is the same they use on your friends to recruit them to be flying monkeys. While other friends may go to the dark side and may never be someone you want in your life again, still others may be worth saving after the pixie dust wears off. A healthy friend would come to you with the concerns your narcissist is talking about you. They would ask you to verify the lies they heard and trust and believe you when you explain. Having your new vocabulary and knowing about flying monkeys does not mean you go running to your friends and family accusing them of being one. that will backfire in many ways. Watch them from afar to determine if they are safe and will not be relaying things back to the narcissist. They will need to earn your trust back, one trustworthy action at a time. It will be your job to make sure the information you are sharing is not getting back to the narcissist. So make sure your friends are safe before sharing too much with them. With no loyalty for anyone, the narcissist easily discards the flying monkeys when they have done the damage intended. There are two general types of flying monkeys, complicit and willing, which are conspirators, and well-meaning dupes. They are deluded. Remember, you were once under the spell of this narcissist, and the flying monkeys often are as well. Use extreme caution when approaching a flying monkey. Never give any information that could feed back to the narcissist. It may be better to unfriend or block them on social media rather than allow them to give spy intel to the narcissist. As I read through this, so many memories come popping up in my mind because I lived to tell. And let me tell you what I went through. I lost all my friends. I had to shut out almost everyone. I was accused of things that were not true. Things got twisted. Things got warped. It was so totally insane that I almost lost my own mind. I cannot even put it in words, the things that I went through, the gaslighting, the mind games, the twisting. It was horrible. He had everybody convinced, even the Christian counselors colluded with him. And this is where I had to learn about narcissistic abuse syndrome. I had to learn what narcissistic personality disorder was. I had to learn about witchcraft and the things that were going on in the house that I lived was just insane. I'm shaking my head right now sharing it with you because it's like whenever I share my story, I'm just in awe of the Almighty, how He rescued me. I will share this piece of my testimony. I was in the domestic violence shelter. I had to leave to save my sanity. And while I was residing in a shelter for abused women, my then husband was out soliciting funds for another program that was being brought into our city to help women who were escaping domestic abuse. Let that sink in. My then husband, who abused me to the point where I had to flee my home, I had to leave everything, including my dog, to go to a shelter. He was out soliciting money for another agency's new program they wanted to bring into our city to assist women and children fleeing domestic abuse. How ironic is that? But you see, other people that didn't know, and I don't think anybody actually knew that his wife was sitting in a domestic abuse because of his abuse, they were giving this man money. Anyways, I just wanted to share that with you because that's just a little itty bitty piece of the insanity. And he also would tell me that his counselor, who at one time was my counselor, she took him on as a client. They colluded together. Once I figured out that she was colluding with him, some people thought that they were having an affair. I don't know if it was a physical affair, but there was something very sick and toxic going on between the two of them. He was with her for 2 years. After I left, he would tell me that her spiritual advisors were watching me and they were reporting to her things that I was doing. And he would say it in a gleeful manner. And in retrospect, that's a form of witchcraft. And she called herself a Christian counselor and colluded with him. And I could tell you all sorts of stuff about that crazy situation. And this is why I tell people, do not go to a counselor unless they're knowledgeable about domestic abuse and narcissistic abuse and narcissistic abuse syndrome. Because most counselors, they will tell you that they know about it, but knowing about it and being skilled and dealing with it are two different things. I know a lot about narcissistic abuse syndrome, narcissistic abuse personality. Well, I'm not qualified. I'm a counselor, yes, but I'm not qualified to deal with that mess. And believe me, there is a very demonic entity that goes along with all of this. And I'm not qualified to go into that either. I'm only qualified to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. So once again, you know, I plead with the listener to become educated so you're not like Job's friends. Job's friends. The question of the week is, are you like Job's friends? Are you a flying monkey? Or do you understand enough about narcissism, domestic abuse? So if somebody comes to you and starts disclosing this stuff, you have resources to point them to, that you will not be feeding into what's going on. Narcissists come off as victims, and victims can come off as crazy because they've been driven crazy. I know I was off the chain. By the time the father, believe me, the father told me to leave. He told me, you pack your bags and you get out. And I was crying and I told him, no, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave another marriage. I don't want to leave another home. I don't want to leave my dog. But he insisted, you pack your bags and you go now. And I packed my bags crying, kicking and screaming. What woman wants to go to a domestic violence shelter? I ask you that. Women don't want to pack up and go to a shelter, and they certainly don't want to take their children. Listener, are you in a position to take women and children into your home? Are you in a position to help the spiritual widows and the spiritual orphans? Are you equipped with basic knowledge of drug addiction, of codependency, of enabling? Do you know how these people operate? Because they are crafty. They are used by Satan himself. They are minions from the pits of hell. Many of them have come from their own background of watching their mothers being beaten and abused. Or maybe it was just beaten by the mouth. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know what makes a man or a woman abusive. Church, we are all a mess. All of us. All of us can be abusive at one time or another. Emotionally abusive, verbally abusive, neglectful. It's a we program, brothers and sisters. We have got to start towing the line. I have heard my story over and over and over from women. Some stories from men. You know, men are not the only ones that are abusive. We women can be vicious, and there are some of our brothers that are married to abusers, and they're ashamed to tell the truth of what's going on. We all need deliverance. We all need healing. We all come from generational curses, generational sins. None of us are any better than the other. It's a we program. We're supposed to be living in community. We're all supposed to be helping each other, not tearing one another down, but building each other up. Every program that I do, I'm on my face repenting. You know, I've said it before, just because I'm on the radio doesn't make me any better than you. It doesn't. Sometimes I think that Albie has me doing this radio program to get me to look at my own stinking self. We all make mistakes. We all miss the mark. We all have areas in our lives that needs repenting of. We're all works in progress. But remember, brothers and sisters, the promise in Philippians 1:6, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you and me, he will be faithful until the day that the Messiah returns. And remember, he is faithful. He is faithful. Even when we are not faithful, even though when we've got egg on our face, mud on our face, however you want to say it. He is faithful. And remember this, brothers and sisters, in Hebrews chapter 12, let's read verse 4. In struggling against sin, you have not resisted to the point of bloodshed. Have you forgotten the warning addressed to you as sons, daughters? My son, daughter, do not take lightly the discipline of Adonai or lose heart when you are corrected by him, because Adonai disciplines the one he loves and punishes every son, daughter he accepts. It is for discipline that you endure. God is treating you as sons and daughters. For what son or daughter does not a father not discipline? But if you are without discipline, something all have come to share, then you are illegitimate and not sons or daughters. If you're listening to this program, chances are you are a son or a daughter of the Most High God. In 1 John 1:9, we are told that, I'm trying to find it, if we say we have no sin, we are deceiving ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous to forgive our sins and purify us from all unrighteousness. We all fall short. We all fall short. Let us go before our God, before Adonai, before our Maker, our Creator, and plead with him to purify our hearts, to forgive us for the times that unbeknownst to us, we were acting as flying monkeys. We did harm to those that have already been harmed. Father, we need you to forgive us. We need healing. We need restoration. We need discipline, Father. For some of us need comfort. You know every listener's heart. You know every area of their lives, whether they are the victim or the victimizer, whether they're the enabler, flying monkey, whatever term we use in this time period of Earth's history. We all need your discipline, and we all need your healing love. We all need you to hedge us in, to protect us, to lead us, to guide us. We all need you to continue, Yeshua, to be faithful and work out those things, those leaven, that leaven in our heart that needs to be worked out. These are perilous times, Father Yahweh. We need you to do in us those things that we cannot do for ourselves. Cleanse our hearts. May we have the mind of the Messiah. May we be as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. May we act as the hands of mercy and grace to the fatherless, to the widows, to the orphans, to the hurting, to the battered, to the bruised. Father, show us those people around us that are hurting. Put something in our hand, Father, that we can give to those that are homeless, those that are hungry, those that are needy. Maybe we can pay somebody's bill. Maybe we can pay it forward and buy someone's meal. What is it that we can do to be the hands of mercy and grace to our neighbor? How can we love our neighbor as we love ourselves? Maybe you're a woman who's been so beaten down that you don't see anything in yourself that's worthy of any kind of love. Maybe you're believing all the lies that your spouse fed to you. Maybe you're a husband who's being abused and you're ashamed of what's going on in your home. You don't want anyone to know how your wife talks to you and treats you. My brother, that is not right. And I'm so sorry you're going through that. It is not right. And your wife needs help. And she needs deliverance. And she needs to know that it's not okay the way she talks to you and the children. We're out of time, brothers and sisters. And I hope that the show has been edifying to you. I hope that you could glean a tiny kernel of something. May Adonai Elohim, bless you and keep you. May he shine his face upon you, and may you find favor in his eyes, and may he extend his hands of mercy and grace to you. Until next time, shalom.